from KMOX Sports.
Okay, boys, here we go.
Welcome to the Grape Bar Sports Open Line.
Those big swings, and he hits a drive. He hits a slammer.
Grape Bar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
Here we go.
Now, Matt Pauly on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, man, let's get going here.
Here we go.
Let's go.
We do welcome you in. It is time for another Grape Bar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly. Fantastic to have you with us today as we do come your way on a Veterans Day, first and foremost. And I know you've heard this from most of the folks here at KMOX throughout the course of the day, but I am very happy to be able to reiterate it to the veterans out there who were willing to go out and put everything on the line. And obviously, when you enlist in the military, you are willing to give up your life for our country, and so we can have all these freedoms and we can live in this country. It is an amazing, amazing thing. And for myself, and I think everybody here at KMOX, we are indebted to veterans, and I'm very glad that we are able to have a day like today where we do celebrate veterans and we're able to honor them the way they deserve to be honored. We've got a lot coming up on the program today. As always, if you want to chime in, you can do so by calling, texting, or tweeting. If you call or text, the phone number is 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900, or you can tweet at me, at Matt Pauly on air, MattPauley on air. You can also leave a voice message on the Odyssey app if you are listening via that. Here's what's coming up on the program today. We're going to talk a lot about the St. Louis Blues in this first hour. We're going to spend a lot of time, and I want to hear from you later on. So we can start up, you can tweet or text now, and just kind of, where are you at with this team? What's your level of disappointment? What's your level of understanding for where things are at? I am incredibly disappointed with the way things are going, not because of their record. Yeah, they're below 500 at 7-8-0, but there have been some alarming things that have happened. There's been some inconsistencies that have occurred, and while it is still very early on in the season, and I am not running away from that fact, they certainly can get things turned around in a very big way. It's been disappointing. They lost 8-1 to the Capitals. To have two 8-1 losses over about 2 weeks, not even, is not great. They also lost a game in Ottawa to the Senators by an 8-1 score. So where are you at? And again, if you want to text in or tweet in now, you can do that at 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. That's how you text into the program, or you can tweet at me, at Matt Pauly on air, MattPauley on air. We have, you know, look, we talk a lot of Cardinals, and obviously so, and we'll talk Cardinals on this program today. We maybe don't talk as much Blues as we should. It's still very early on in the season, but I think that loss that they had the other night against Washington, losing 8-1 after a not very good effort against Utah, where the team was essentially called out by their coach in a really intense sort of way, but certainly they were unhappy with the way they played against Utah last Thursday. They made some changes. Pavel Buchnevich moved off the center spot and moved up to a winger spot. Like, they're trying to do some things. They were very, very clear. Drew Bannister, the head coach of the Blues, was very clear coming off that Utah game that he was unhappy with the way the team played. And as opposed to the team responding to that, what did they do? They went and lost to Washington 8-1 in a game where the third period was one of the worst periods of hockey we have seen in St. Louis for a very, very, very long time. And yes, you can chalk it up as one period and one game and all those sort of things, but there are some red flags that exist right now, and I want to get into that coming up. I mean, they got outscored 5-0 in that final period the other day. Just a horrendous effort by the team. And they're going to bounce back. I would be shocked if they didn't completely bounce back against Boston tomorrow. But it's not about how they look tomorrow or look later on this week. How do they look 2 weeks from now? How do they look 3 weeks from now? Where do they find some level of consistency to become the team that they're going to be? And I know people connect this to the injuries to Robert Thomas and Philip Broberg. I don't, and I'll explain that coming up later on in the program. And we'll hear from Drew Bannister. They ran practice today. It was a kind of a teaching-focused practice today. We'll talk all about that coming up in just a few moments. Next hour, we've got a couple guests. We'll talk with Daniel Esteve from Fox 2. We'll talk all things with him, including Missouri. Somehow, some way, they find a way to win. It was an ugly game for Mizzou against Oklahoma, but they score a bunch of points in a very short amount of time. They make a great play to score the winning touchdown. I mean, it was an exciting finish, an ugly, what, 3.5 quarters, but a good finish. And it's funny, they are a 7-2 SEC team. They're a 7-2 SEC team, and you'd be hard-pressed to hear people saying many good things about them. And myself included. I'm not, when that comes out of my mouth, it almost sounds like I'm being critical of the coverage of the team. I'm not. I'm right there with you. But it's just kind of funny when you take a step back and you don't really investigate how they got to 7-2 and you just look at the surface level of 7-2, that should be pretty darn good and you should feel very good about where the team is at. But I don't think a lot of Mizzou fans do. So we'll dive into that a little bit with Daniel Esteve. SLU Billikens basketball played a non-D1 yesterday. They played an NAIA team in Avila from the Kansas City area. And they won by a lot, but it was the first win of the Josh Schertz era. The TV voice of the St. Louis Billikens, in addition to being our sports director here at KMOX, is Tom Ackerman. And we'll talk Billikens basketball with him coming up at about 7:35. So that's what's going to be going on. Just a reminder for you as well, coming up this evening at 8 o'clock, it is the Gas House Gang. We're going to roll your way from 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock. Myself, along with Tom, Kevin Wheeler, and Bernie Miklas. It is a Cardinals Monday, so we talk nothing but Cardinals baseball. We got into some really interesting conversations today. We talked a lot about the bullpen. There were some disagreements between the four of us, too, which I think is really good. I think we all kind of have our own unique take on baseball, and we all look at it just enough differently that we can all understand where the other people are coming from, but look at things a little bit differently. Like, I'm somebody who I would like to see the Cardinals give Gordon Graceffo still an opportunity to be a starter. Kevin Wheeler thinks Gordon Graceffo should head to the bullpen. I'm someone who thinks that Tink Hentz should be looked at for a bullpen role this year because he's having such a hard time staying healthy, and he has yet to throw 100 innings in the minor leagues, and we've seen him in spring training. His stuff plays. I would give him the opportunity to maybe work into the big leagues as a relief pitcher. That doesn't mean close the door on him eventually being a starter. Bernie Miklas disagrees with that. Bernie thinks that this is a guy who needs to be a starter and continue to be developed as a starter. So we had some good, healthy, fun disagreements on the show today, and you'll be able to hear all of that during the 8 o'clock hour. It is the Gas House Gang here on KMOX. We'll take a break, and when we come back, we're going to hear from Blues coach Drew Bannister. He met with the media after practice today. Where does this team go? What is this team focusing on coming off that 8-1 loss on Saturday? We'll discuss that coming up next. And then later on this hour, we'll give you the opportunity to chime in on how you feel about the Blues right now. We're doing that all this hour. It's Blues hockey. We're talking about it here on KMOX. It's Gray Bar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name's Matt Pauley, continuing to take you till 8 o'clock this evening. If you want to chime in on the St. Louis Blues, in our next segment, we'll be taking phone calls, text messages, tweets. You can voice message via the Odyssey app. If you want to text or tweet in, you can do that now at 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. Looking forward to hearing from you on where you're at on the Blues. You know, when I throw out these sort of things on the Cardinals, always hear from tons and tons of people. The Blues, yeah, it's a little bit different when we're talking about the Blues, and I am interested in, fervor is the wrong word here, but I am interested in just what the reaction is to what we are seeing right now from the Blues, for sure. Wanted to go through some of what Drew Bannister, the Blues coach, had to say earlier today. So the Blues were back practicing after their 8-1 loss to Washington on Saturday. They're going to be in action against Boston coming up tomorrow. And look, nobody was mincing words about how bad of a performance that was against Washington. I'll at least give credit where credit is due when it comes to that. Everybody wore it. Everybody understood it. And that's good. That's better than the alternative. I'm not trying to be dismissive of something that's good. You want to see and hear accountability when things are not going well. That is the first step. But at the same time, when this is the second time that that's happened, teams should not be losing 8-1 like ever. But you definitely shouldn't be losing 8-1 twice in a 2-week span. You shouldn't be losing 8-1 at home on a Saturday night with a good crowd. Like there's so many red flags that go up with performances like that. And while, yes, it is just 1 of 82 or 2 of 82, there are some trends and some things that are on trajectories that you do not like when it comes to this Blues team. So let's listen in to Drew Bannister. And he started by talking about what the focus was for today's practice.
Just focusing on some of the things that we identified in the game as far as our line changes and a little bit of our line change forecheck and neutral zone forecheck that we have to tighten up. And, you know, just where we want to see growth in our game. Obviously having a positive day here and feeling good about ourselves.
Yeah, sometimes line changes get overlooked, but there were a couple of positions that put you back.
Yeah, and we've been really good. You know, it was something that we focused on, you know, where we noticed going into the Philly game. And I think, you know, from Philly game on until that second period in that game, our guys were really good. Our shifts were short. Guys were changing properly. We were coming on the ice properly. But it got out of hand from us. And, you know, really, if you look at the first three goals, they were all either offline changes or our forecheck that, you know, if we tighten that up, those three goals don't happen.
Was the Toronto game the one where you were really impressed with that?
Yeah. Even Philly, like in Philly, I thought our shift length and our line changes, and then into Toronto and then into even the Tampa game, like we were changing well, we were keeping our shift short, guys were changing in the offensive zone. A lot of things that we talked about, you know, a team game and setting up your teammate to have success coming on the ice.
So that's Drew Bannister talking about the focus on today, and they were really focused on line changes. They feel like they were in a pretty good spot not that long ago, but they were very upset with the effectiveness of line changes and the team getting caught out of position and giving up some goals. So that was one of the big focuses. I kind of chuckle in a way on that, because there's a lot of things that went wrong in an 8-1 loss, and the first thing you're talking about is line changes. But at the same time, again, that he said it, that the first three goals that they gave up, if you accomplish the line change in an effective manner, you're probably not in that same position. You're probably not being caught the way they were, and maybe it turns into a different game. Maybe not. He would come back to that a couple more times, and you'll hear that as we do continue on playing some of the audio from earlier today. So I was not at practice, but I certainly saw media reports about it, and different folks who covered the Blues made the point that it really seemed to be kind of a teaching day, that as they were going through things, there was a lot of stopping practice and really focusing on some of the very small details that need to get better. So it seemed to be a detailed day. I think some fans would have liked for it to be a hellfire and brimstone kind of day coming off an 8-1 loss, but clearly when hearing from Drew Bannister, that is not the case.
I think today is, like, this wasn't a day where we're trying to, you know, it's not a whipping day. I think it's, you know, get information from the players, give them the information that we went over yesterday and that we saw, and just, you know, clean up some of the small things that we can, you know, that we can manage, and it'll really make a big difference in our game and feel good about ourselves.
There are areas to improve on all across the board, but do you hone in on one, and if you fix that, maybe everything else falls into place? Is it defense? Is it special teams?
Yeah, no, I think the biggest thing for us, like we said, was our line changes and our forecheck coming off our line change, and that feeds into, you know, how you break out the puck. It feeds out how you come back into your own zone and your returns and how you defend, you know, even your transition game and being able to turn pucks over to get on the offense. So just making small adjustments, and not even adjustments, just getting back to what we do well and trusting each other that guys are going to do their job will make a big difference in our game.
The final thing when it comes to this specifically, kind of like from a big picture standpoint from Drew Bannister, when you lose that kind of way For a second time in a couple weeks, and when just everything sort of around the program, around the team, seems very negative. Bannister talked about how tough it is to bounce back from that and the way that you do need to go about that next practice and that next game coming off losses like they just had.
As a staff, as the players, I'm sure it is a tough day to get through, and yesterday was a day where we can collect ourselves and go through things as a staff and then present it to the players as simple as possible and make the adjustments that we need so we can have success moving forward. You know, it wasn't an ideal situation. You know, I read the comments players and I stand by what they said. You know, it was unacceptable for us and we have to be better. You know, but fixing the things that we can right now will make us a better team.
Are you pleased with the way it looked like all the players are engaged, listening, going through? Are you pleased with their reaction?
Yeah, and this group has been really good. Like from day one in training camp, their interaction with the coaches and just, you know, being on the same page. And that's something I think right now, you know, when you get into a game like you do, like guys care. They want to do the right thing, but sometimes they get away from doing their own job and trying to do somebody else's job, and opens up bigger holes. So right now, I think it's a trust thing with our guys. They just trust that you, when you step on the ice, you're going to do your job, and your line mates or your D partners are going to do their job.
If it is a trust thing, that's an issue right now, because if you heard the things that were being said in the locker room after that 8-1 loss, and Drew Bannister alluded to, you know, reading the comments from the players, and you see what Braden Schenn had to say. To paraphrase, there was a lot of talk about not everybody giving a full effort. And there was a lot of talk about some players just giving up in that third period on Saturday. You can't have that. That says something about the character of this team. And I'm not trying to be a broken record here. I'm really not. I would love nothing more than for what I'm about to say, for this narrative just to no longer be a thing. That's what I'm rooting for. I never want to talk about again what I'm about to talk about, but this team has forced me to continue to talk about it. And that's the fact that I stand by the belief that the core of this team are the same guys that did not perform for Craig Berube and got a really good coach fired. And then now that, there's some additions. Doug Armstrong had a really nice offseason of bringing in players. And I'm not trying to be dismissive of the job that he did, but I still very much question. In fact, I question more now than I did even when Craig Berube got fired about the correct character being on this team. And they're just going to have to prove me wrong. And I am rooting for them to prove me wrong. I want them to prove me wrong. I never, ever, ever, ever want to talk about again that the core of this team is the team that is the group that got Craig Berube fired. I am ready for that to just be part of the past. But it continues. It continues to be part of the team right now because we are seeing them play in a way that lacks consistency, that lacks fire, that lacks toughness, where, again, if you can talk about a team giving up, if you can talk about players individually giving up, that's not good. And at this point, I don't even know who it's a reflection on. It's easy to blame the coach. I think that's kind of the cop-out excuse at this point. Drew Bannister is a perfectly fine hockey coach. Is he a distinguishable, great hockey coach? Probably not, but we haven't seen enough to know that. They played marginally better after the coaching change last year. They were in playoff contention into the final week of the season. All those things are true. It's now his team, and it is his job to get guys to play. And look, they're going to play. They're going to have a bounce back tomorrow. They're going to be fine tomorrow, like I said, but that's not going to show us anything. That's not going to prove us anything. Are they going to have another outing like they had on Saturday at some point in the next week, in the next 2 weeks, in the next 3 weeks, in the next month? And if that happens, then that tells us something. I wish I could watch them play Boston tomorrow and just be able to say, okay, they're good. Stuff's fixed. That was just a blip. That was nothing, and all's good. They can put their best effort of the season on the ice tomorrow night against Boston, and it means absolutely nothing until they start to find some consistency. The team that they've played twice recently, a pretty good team that they've played twice and played well against, is their former coach in Craig Berube. So this group that got that guy fired last year can come together and play good hockey when they're playing against the man? But then the next game after, they play terribly, or I guess not the next game after, they played all right against the Lightning, but two games after and three games after, they just don't put it all together? Like, I would rather them just stink all the way across the board. But the fact that early on in the season we saw the ability that this team had to come back, and then we see their two games against the Maple Leafs where they play some of their best hockey of the year against their former coach, but they just can't keep any level of high-level play going. I want to get into, because again, I know there's people who are saying it, but Matt, you're not being fair to them. What you're saying is completely unfair because you are not including the fact that they're playing without two of their top players in Robert Thomas and Philip Broberg. I will address that. We might hear a little bit more from Drew Bannister, and we welcome your thoughts as well. You can call, you can text, you can tweet. If you call or text, the phone number is 314-436-7900. 314-436-7900. That's how you call or text. You can tweet at me, at Matt Pauly on air. We welcome your thoughts on the Blues and where they're at right now as we continue on with the Graybar Sports Open Line in just a moment here on KMOX. It's Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. Matt Pauly taking you till 8 o'clock this evening. Next hour, a couple guests, Daniel Esteve from Fox 2 will join us. Our own Tom Ackerman will be with us to talk Slew Billikens basketball. And then at 8 o'clock, speaking of Tom, him, me, Kevin Wheeler, Bernie Miklas, we have you from 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock for the Gas House Gang. 1 hour of nothing but Cardinals talk. We get into a lot of things. We recorded it earlier today. We do that every weekday, 12 noon. You can watch it live on the various KMOX social media channels, and then we replay it at 8 o'clock in the evening. Certainly a fun conversation that we had today. Talk a lot about the Cardinals' relief pitching, also the outfield situation, and continue to speculate on who might get traded and what it would look like depending on who does end up getting moved. We're welcoming your phone calls, your text messages, your tweets, and your voice messages. If you want to talk St. Louis Blues hockey, you call or text 314-436-7900. 314-436-7900. You tweet at me, at Matt Pauly on air, or you leave a voice message via the Odyssey app. Look, I've heard from folks who say, I'm not being fair when talking about the Blues and my criticism of the Blues because they are without two of their top players in Robert Thomas and Philip Broberg. And I believe strongly with what I'm about to say. Because if you're listening to the show, you've probably watched sports for a really long time. I've watched sports for a really long time. Not 100% of the time, but you know what generally happens when a team loses one of their top players? Everybody comes together and they find another gear. It's not long lasting. Eventually, the team will regress to the mean. It's kind of like a coaching change. If a team makes a coaching change in the middle of the season, there's always that bump right after it. All of a sudden, everybody's more locked in, and you know the low-hanging fruit talking point, the narratives that are out there. Oh, look, it was the last guy's fault because look how well they're playing now. And then eventually everything kind of comes back to what it was before. That happens. So if you sit there and you lose a Robert Thomas, if you sit there and you lose a Philip Broberg, more often than not, what's going to happen is the rest of the guys on the team are going to find another level. They're gonna be more locked in. They're gonna put their best effort on the ice. And that's gonna last a little while. Maybe it'll last a week, maybe it'll last 2 weeks, maybe it'll last a month. It's not gonna last forever. You can go back to the tape if you want. When Thomas got injured, and then when Broberg got injured, I said I'm not gonna be judging this team immediately on what's happening. I'm most interested to see what it looks like a month from now when you're still maybe another month out from getting those guys back, because I had the assumption that they were going to have that kind of liftoff, and they really haven't. I think I was wrong on that. They just haven't. So when people say that I'm not being fair about this Blues team because they are currently playing without two of their top players, I say, I don't think that really applies right now. It eventually will apply, but it doesn't apply right now. And until they find a way to put a consistent effort on the ice, game in, game out, it's just going to be the same stuff over and over and over again. And we're not asking for this team to win a Stanley Cup this year. We're not asking for this team to be one of the top teams in the conference, not to be one of the top teams in the division. What we're asking for is for this team to essentially be a little bit better than what they were last year. Last year, they were a team that stuck around in playoff contention till the end of the year. I think what you would like this year from them is for that to be true. Maybe even they sneak into the playoffs, but the consistency of play to stay at a fairly high level from to the start of the season to the end of the season. And right now, this team is not giving the indication that that's going to happen. Wanted to play a couple other things that Drew Bannister did have to say about this team and where they're at. This game against Washington was the first game where Pavel Buchnevich had moved from the center spot to the wing spot. They feel like it's a better thing for the team right now to have him on that top line. Obviously, it didn't work against Washington. It was just one game. They felt pretty good about how it looked when they did that towards the end of the Utah game. So coming off that game, where is this team at right now when it comes to Buchnevich being on the wing?
Bucci is a player that that wants to excel, that wants to be a difference maker, whether he's on the wing or at center. But at the end of the day, he wants to do what's best for the team. And as a group right now, we think this is best for the team. And, you know, he's been a really reliable center. I think sometimes the player gets frustrated because he doesn't see the points on the board. But I think it's important for him to focus on how he's playing away from the puck and what that means to us. And I can go back again and go back to the Toronto game and the Tampa game, like hard matchups. But because we were deep down the center, we won those games.
How do you feel like he's matched up against some of the top guys?
He's done a great job. You know, he's done a great job. Again, like, you know, whether you're playing, you know, against Matthews or Cirelli or guys like that, like he's matched them and he's played extremely well defensively against them. He's made it tough on them. You know, he's a real good two-way forward. And when you put him in that position, I feel like he thrives on the defensive side. And it's just, you know, him, his willingness and wantingness to really, like, you know, push the offense too, but the recognition of what he gives to us when he's down the middle and how he defends so well.
So basically what he's saying there is they do want Buchnevich to eventually be back at that center spot, that they feel good, especially from a defensive standpoint, when he's in that middle spot and what he needs to do against some of the top players in the league. He's done a nice job defensively, but from a team standpoint, they want more offensively, and right now that line at the top is something that they're trying to get something out of. So we'll see. Now they moved things around. When you look at what they did at practice today, Buchnevich was at the center spot with Jake Neighbors and Jordan Kyrou, and Braden Schenn was on the second line. Dylan Holloway was moved back out to the wing. That's what they did a little bit in practice today. I have a hard time believing that that's going to stick around. We'll talk more about that tomorrow and whether it looks like it's going to stay that way following morning skate. I think they were just trying to work on some things today, and we've already discussed that. One player who did not play on Saturday was Alexander Texier. He was a healthy scratch. That came off as a little bit of a surprise, and Bannister did explain that decision.
We've had conversations with Tex, and he was a great player for us, you know, and then he got injured, and I think it was just him timing, getting his timing back, and sometimes it's good just to watch the game, but certainly I think he's going to be a big part of our team and a big part of the success of our team moving forward, and he has a lot to give, and I think, you know, sometimes taking a step back and watching the game and then getting him right back in there, and I'm sure he's going to be a big part of us moving forward and the success we have against Boston.
That's Drew Bannister speaking earlier today, as again, the Blues coming off a clunker, a stinker on Saturday, and they'll try to get it back going tomorrow when they match up against Boston. The finalist for the end-of-season baseball honors being announced, as the Baseball Writers Association has the three finalists for the major awards. We will go through them. I'll give you my thoughts on them. Maybe we'll get Kyle to chime in a little bit on this as well. That's coming up in just a moment. This is Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Back at it as we roll on here through a Monday night again, a little bit more than an hour from now, just after the 8 o'clock news. We've got the Gas House Gang. Cardinals Monday is going to feature myself, Tom Ackerman, Kevin Wheeler, and Bernie Miklas talking all things Cardinals baseball for an hour. Some of the end-of-season finalists for end-of-season awards coming out. So the Major League Baseball runs their All-MLB award show. That's going to be coming up on Thursday night. I want to get into some of the Baseball Writers Awards in just a moment, but I was looking at the MLB Twitter account. Kyle Sixta, this sits with me a little poorly. A MLB tweet says, some of the most electric players in the sport, which shortstop earned your all-MLB vote? And they list 10 shortstops. Willie Adames, O'Neill Cruz, who isn't even a shortstop anymore, Ellie De La Cruz, Gunnar Henderson, Francisco Lindor, Zach Neto, Corey Seager, Ezekiel Tovar, Trey Turner, and Bobby Witt Jr. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that Mason wins even in the top three of that group, but there are definitely some players on that list of 10 who I would take off and put Mason Wynn on.
Having O'Neill Cruz and Zach Neto over Mason Wynn feels very disrespectful.
Yes, even Ezekiel Tovar.
Definitely, and I know he won the Gold Glove over Wynn, but those three over Wynn does not feel right.
Right. There's clearly some... You can even make the Ellie De La Cruz argument.
You could.
Yeah, just based off what he did defensively, the amount of errors he commits and everything. I mean, he's an exciting player. Don't get me wrong. But yeah, I thought that was interesting that there's no Mason Wynn on that list of 10. All right, let's go through some of the finalists for the major awards. AL Most Valuable Player Award finalist, Aaron Judge, Juan Soto, Bobby Witt Jr. There was a point late in the season where it felt like Witt had a little bit of momentum on this one, but I think everybody would be pretty surprised if it's anybody but Aaron Judge.
Yeah, Bobby Witt had a great season. He's going to finish second, I'm sure, and there was a point where it was Judge and Witt, and you didn't know which it was going to be, but yeah, Judge ran away with it.
The Manager of the Year finalist in the National League, Carlos Mendoza from the Mets, Pat Murphy from the Brewers, and Mike Schilt from the Padres. So Schilt's already won one. I would have to laugh if Murphy won it from the Brewers because Craig Counsell never won a Manager of the Year award when he was managing the Brewers. He always came in second, and I was covering the Brewers at the time, and there were times where I thought that he had earned it, and he didn't. Obviously, with what the Mets did, going from being one of the worst teams in baseball to getting all the way to the NLCS, with all due respect, this is not a shot at Mike Schilt whatsoever, but I do think the Brewers story and the Mets stories and being led by those two guys is a little bit better than the Padres story.
I think I'd agree with that.
Who would you give it to? But I bet Mendoza wins it because he's a New York guy. He's going to get some of those New York votes.
I think it would make sense for Mendoza to win it. And it's his first year, right? Or is it his second?
It's his second, right?
I think it might
be.
Yeah. Either way, obviously taking the Mets from where they were in 2023 to this year, he's probably got to be the leading candidate.
Probably. But Murphy did a really good job in Milwaukee. He did a really... And again, these awards are voted on... The thing that would be going for Murphy, the awards are voted on before the postseason starts. So if you take away the Brewers' failure and take away the Mets' surge in the postseason, maybe you look at it a little bit different.
I would think so.
Yeah. So maybe Murphy ends up winning it. Rookie of the Year on the American League side of things. Jackie Robinson, Rookie of the Year Award, excuse me. Colton Cowser, Luis Gill, Austin Wells.
Luis Gill, probably.
Probably.
Or Cowser, one of those two.
Yeah, I guess. Close. I don't know. I don't have a strong feeling on that one. American League Manager of the Year finalist, A.J. Hinch from Detroit, Matt Quatraro from Kansas City, Stephen Vogt from Cleveland. All three of those guys are deserving. I think maybe I lean Detroit because, I mean, they're selling at the deadline and they do what they did. But then Vogt did it from day, like, what's more impressive, turning on midway through the season or just being really good from the start? And then, you know, Kansas City probably from expectations before the season got started to where they finished. But all three of those, three AL Central guys and all very deserving.
Eileen vote there just because it was all season long. And to your point, this is before the playoffs that they vote on this. So you take away the Tigers and them making the playoff run that they did, and I probably would think it's vote.
Yeah, you're probably right. American League Cy Young Award finalists, Emmanuel Clase, Seth Lugo, Tarek Skubal. I think Skubal wins this.
Skubal all day.
Skubal. Okay, we're on that one. National League Rookie of the Year Award, Jackson Chourio from the Brewers, Jackson Merrill from the Padres, Paul Skeens from the Pirates. I think I go Jackson Merrill.
Really?
Yeah.
What's your reasoning there?
I think overall, I think he had the biggest impact. And Chourio would probably be my second, but Chourio was terrible for the first 2 months of the season. And I don't know, the fact that Skeens was a Pirate and he wasn't used quite as much. They were very careful with him. And look, they weren't in a pennant race, so they used him differently. So yeah, I think Merrill was the guy from start to finish who had the biggest impact of the three.
Interesting. I just don't think you can argue with Skeens this year. I mean, 170 strikeouts that he had. He's in the Cy Young vote. He's in the final three for Cy Young, too.
Yeah.
I mean, he was just, we haven't seen a rookie season like Skeens in forever, I feel like. It's got to be him, in my opinion.
I put what they did for a winning team into this as well. So I'd vote him third.
Interesting.
I would vote him third, and that's why I don't have a vote, probably. Cy Young finalist in the National League. You mentioned Skeen, Zach Wheeler, Chris Sale. To me, Chris Sale all the way.
Sale.
Yeah, Sale's easy. MVP in the National League, Francisco Lindor, Ketel Marte, Shohei Ohtani. Ohtani all the way.
Ohtani.
Okay, so we're in agreement on most of them. So the one that we disagree with the most is Rookie of the Year in the National League.
Yeah, that's an interesting one.
Yeah, so we'll see. Again, those are going to be announced later, and I guess Kyle and I can have a milkshake bet on who ends up winning the Rookie of the Year in the National League. We will take a break, and when we return next hour, we've got a couple interviews. Daniel Esteve from Fox 2 is going to be with us. Tom Ackerman's going to be with us. All coming up here on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Into our second hour of the program, we're about an hour out from the start of the Gas House Gang. That's going to roll your way tonight and every weekday evening at 8 o'clock, barring sports play-by-play. We'll have it for you. On Mondays, it's always Kevin Wheeler, me, Tom Ackerman, Bernie Miklas, and then the other 4 days of the week, it's some combination of the two of us. I believe I'm with you on Wednesday with Tom this week, and then Friday with Bernie and those three other guys. We'll have the other couple days between combinations of those two. I don't want to give too much away from our conversation tonight, but I'm doing this in reverse. I kind of want to jump off something that we talked about tonight, and you'll hear the full conversation later on. But I have made the point over and over and over ad nauseum when we talk about the Cardinals. I've made the point that I think from an offensive standpoint and from a starting pitching standpoint, if everything happens the way we kind of expect it to happen, that I'm comfortable with the group being at least as good as they were this past year moving forward. I think there is a clear pathway towards them being a better run-scoring team even without Paul Goldschmidt and, say, Nolan Arenado, who seems likely to be traded. Now, that hinges upon the idea of Jordan Walker and Nolan Gorman taking steps forward. And that's not guaranteed, but I think those guys are too good to not be able to harness something. And I am the thing I believe in most right now with the Cardinals is that this offseason is going to be an offseason of them bringing in really good people. They started with Chaim Bloom, not this offseason. He's been around a little bit longer. And then to bring in somebody like Rob Serfolio, and I'm excited about the Brant Brown hiring. When you start to dig in on him a little bit more, I get more and more excited about that, and they're going to continue to bring in smart people. And smart people inside of an organization have the ability to make players better. So there's not a guarantee that Nolan Gorman's going to get better. There's not a guarantee that Jordan Walker's going to get better. But if these, you know, we've seen players leave St. Louis time and time and time and time again and go be better somewhere else. Well, I am of the belief, and we can revisit this a year from now, 2 years from now. Hopefully I'm talking to you on this station for a very, very, very long time. We can revisit this as the years move forward. I don't think that's going to be a thing quite as much anymore. I think the Cardinals are going to have a really good infrastructure where they're going to help players become, again, that best version of themselves. So offensively and from a starting pitching standpoint, I'm very comfortable with where it's going to be. Where I'm not comfortable, and this goes off the assumption that Ryan Helsley is going to get moved, and that's not a guarantee. There was, in the reports coming out of San Antonio at the GM meetings last week, they certainly indicated that maybe this foregone conclusion that Helsley was going to get traded, that it maybe was not as much of a foregone conclusion as some of us in the media have made it out to be. I still think Helsley is likely to get traded. And that's the area that concerns me, the bullpen. Because while I can see an offensive group that can score more runs than they scored this past season, even without Paul Goldschmidt and Nolan Arenado, as I look at a starting pitching group that can, from an aggregate standpoint, put up better numbers or as good of numbers, even without Kyle Gibson and Lance Lynn, it's harder for me to see a bullpen group that can be as successful, as effective as what the Cardinals bullpen group was this year, anchored by Ryan Helsley, if they do not have Helsley. The first question would be, who's the first guy who gets the opportunity to be the team's closer? And I can just imagine that even before the season got started, it would start out as a closer by committee, and you see who takes the job. And look, they got guys. They've got JoJo Romero. They've got, you know, Ryan Fernandez is somebody who could certainly take another step forward. Watching Matthew Liberatore go through a full season working out of the bullpen and perhaps being that high leverage reliever, you know, right from Jump Street, and not futzing around with him going from being a starter to a reliever to being an opener on a bullpen game. Like, just don't do any of that stuff and just let him be a final three innings close and late guy. Well, I think he's got the opportunity to be a really special relief pitcher in there. But even with those guys, and I like all those guys, they're not going to lock down as many leads late with that group there at the end of a game. And that's the question. If Ryan Helsley goes away and this team does outperform what they did last year offensively and from a starting pitching standpoint, what does the bullpen look like? Now, I'll also say this. I'm not trying to invoke fear. And look, the Cardinals bullpen, I don't know if people realize just how good it was this year. When you look at what their run differential was and what their record should have been, the Cardinals won as many games as they won this year. The strongest part of their team was the bullpen, and it was anchored by Ryan Helsley. And Andrew Kittredge obviously was a big part of that as well. Indications are that Kittredge probably won't be back, but that's not a guarantee. I know John Mozeliak was on with Tom on Sports on a Sunday morning yesterday, and John kind of Mozeliak stopped himself in the middle of his thought almost because he doesn't talk about free agents, but it seems like there's at least some desire to maybe bring in Andrew Kittredge back. Kittredge's going to have an opportunity possibly to go make a lot of money. He had a really, really good season. And if there are teams out there that are very interested in him, then he should go get his pay. This might be his only opportunity in his big league career to go get a big-time payday. And if that's sitting out there for him, go get it and be thankful that you had the year that you had with the Cardinals. But if it's not there, is there a scenario where he's back with the Cardinals on a one-year deal and you try again next year? You know, the thing that's kind of hanging out there right now is I really think spending is going to be down mostly across Major League Baseball. And it's connected to the TV situation. I can't repeat this too many times. The fact that the Cardinals are only getting a 23% reduction in local TV rights by staying with Bally, now FanDuel, that's about as good of a situation as any team is going to be out there. For all those teams that dropped Bally and are going to do their own thing for, what is it, the Twins and the Brewers, and the Rangers are looking at local TV stuff, so they don't really count. But the teams that are just going to be producing it themselves the way the Padres do, the way the Diamondbacks do, those teams are going to have a more extreme hit when it comes to their local TV money. The Cardinals losing at 23%, plus the fact that you have added an added revenue channel coming in with legalized gambling the Cardinals are probably in about as good of a shape in that area as just about any team out there that's been connected to Bally. One sidebar on that really quickly, and I'm not trying to begin put the fear of whoever in you, but Major League Baseball and the Atlanta Braves petitioned against the bankruptcy filing of Diamond Sports Group, which would allow FanDuel Sports Network to continue to exist. So for them to continue to exist, they have to come out of bankruptcy where the court approves their plan going forward. And the Braves, who were the first team that they basically kept the contract on, plus Major League Baseball, has already told the bankruptcy judge that they are opposing the plan. So we've talked so much about what's going to happen moving forward with the TV situation. I think the Cardinals are going to end up being on FanDuel Sports Network, and it's all going to kind of work itself out. But this situation is not over yet, because now the court has to listen to Major League Baseball and the Atlanta Braves on that situation. But the point I'm trying to get to, there are, whether it's Andrew Kittredge or whether it's another relief pitcher, when spending is down and there's many free agent relievers out there as there's going to be, we're going to be 2 weeks out from spring training, and there's going to be a ton of pretty good relief pitchers out there that can be had for a low number. And I would suspect that, especially if the Cardinals are somewhat in a similar place as they were in this past year and they still want to compete at least a little bit, that likely they could play in that area, especially as we get closer to spring training. All right, we got to talk some Mizzou football. We'll talk a little more Blues hockey. Our good friend Daniel Esteve from Fox 2, he's going to join us in just a moment. This is a Gray Bar Sports Open Line on KMOX. It's a Gray Bar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. We take you till 8 o'clock in our next segment, 7:30, 7:35 or so. We're going to talk with Tom Ackerman. We'll talk SLU Billikens basketball with him. In addition to being the KMOX Sports Director, he is now the TV voice of Billikens basketball. Right now, very happy to go to the guest line, and we welcome in a guy that you see in here on Fox 2 and at Channel 11. He is Daniel Esteve. Follow him on Twitter at Daniel J. Esteve. Always great to be able to talk to him. Daniel, how are you?
Matt, you know, when your people called my people about being on your program this evening, I almost question it because of how well you've been doing in my fantasy football league. So I almost questioned it, but I can't miss out an opportunity to chat with you.
I'm not doing well this week, though, and you beat me 2 weeks ago. So I had a hot start. I'm starting to fall back a little bit here lately.
Are you telling me that I'm responsible for the fall-off of the great Matt Pauley?
Well, let's also be very clear. You're the guy that when you were up by like a half a point going into Monday Night Football with your kicker, you benched your kicker just to make sure you didn't get a negative point and you didn't end up accidentally losing that game.
You know, the analytics department over with the St. Louis Cardinals would tell me to do a move like that. So I figured, if they would recommend it, it's got to be the right thing to do, right?
I guess so. You got the win. That's all that really matters. All right, so you're a Mizzou guy. What do you take away from that game? I mean, that was 3.5 quarters of kind of just junk, and then all of a sudden, basically in like 3-4 minutes, they put it all together. They have one great play. They end up winning. This is a 7-2 SEC team that nobody feels good about, but they just keep winning games.
They do keep winning games, and I say this all while wearing a Mizzou t-shirt, so take that with a grain of salt and take that as you want it. But in all reality, I was one of the people that maybe wasn't as high, and perhaps that's just to protect myself, on the Missouri Tigers, even when they were doing well earlier in the season. I think the reality has to set in at some point that Oklahoma has not been a good football team. So from an actual football perspective, how excited can you be about that win? Probably not that excited. However, given the storylines, the injuries, Brady Cook out, the amount that Mizzou Nation built that game up for, there's a lot of pressure there. So you have to give credit at the very least to this Mizzou Tiger team on the intangibles, kind of being able to step up big in a big environment, even if it's not the stiffest competition.
When you watch that game, what happens that allows them to score all those points late?
I think faith, trust, and pixie dust a little bit in there, right? You got to make some of it. I mean, hey, throw the ball up there and see what happens. You've got Theo East, Luther Burden. You know, Coach Strinkwitz in the postgame talked a lot about how, hey, at halftime we had them right where we wanted them, and we were going to play slow and establish the run, and then we were going to hit him through the air in the second half. I mean, in all reality, Drew Pines didn't even throw for 200 yards in that ball game. It's not like it was an air raid offense that absolutely dominated, and it took some huge third down conversions on the part of Drew Pine to even give the Tigers a chance. So, honestly, aside from some really poor turnovers on the part of the Oklahoma Sooners offense, you have to give credit to the Mizzou defense for the most part. Yes, the offense had some big moments, but the Mizzou defense allowed them to stay in that ballgame as long as they did.
Bad news coming down the line over the last couple hours. The redshirt junior offensive lineman, Connor Tolleson, really one of the top centers in the nation, going to be out for the rest of the season with a knee injury. That's just another thing that hurts this team.
It really does, and the injury list is about as big as a grocery list or a novel at this point. It just continues to grow. Obviously, you have the opportunity to potentially get your starting quarterback back. That's going to be priority number one. But an offensive line, if it's not right, it doesn't matter who you have at quarterback. The reality, though, is, and this is something I posed to Drinkwitz after the game, and he didn't take to, not kindly, just kind of ignored the question for the most part. There are five SEC teams with two losses, three with one loss, zero unbeaten SEC teams. You've got three games left in this season. You are very much in the hunt. So I don't care how you're playing. It's late in the season. You've got a chance. Anything can happen. Anything also hurts you, and losing an offensive lineman is a big blow.
That's funny that because, I mean, in his post-game conversation, he talked about, you know, still alive for the college football playoff, which doesn't seem like a likely thing, but depending on the way things, if you win out and you go 10-2 and some other things happen, then at least you're going to get a look.
1,000%. And not only that, but on national radio today, he goes on the SEC network and says, oh, yeah, I think if you win 10 wins in the SEC, you should automatically qualify for the college football playoff, or you should qualify for the college football playoff. I mean, where was that energy? The only energy I got was, no, we don't care about anything but South Carolina. South Carolina is the complete focus of this football team. And don't get me wrong, it should be. South Carolina has been very impressive lately. And Mizzou clearly has some issues that they need to address heading into that matchup. But you've got to be hyped with the position you've put yourself in, especially after a win against Oklahoma, because you lose that game, you're talking about the fact that you got to start building for next season, because this one, for the most part, given what people hoped you would do, is over at that point if you lose to Oklahoma.
You are so bitter about the answer you got, aren't you?
I'm a little frustrated. Don't get me wrong. I'm not in Columbia every weekend, so I'm not a familiar face to Eli Drinkwitz. And Martin Kilcoyne put it very eloquently today. As far as a coach that can give you a great bite, good, bad, middle, Eli Drinkwitz is pretty box office in that regard. And he had some great bites in that post-game press conference. So I can't complain too much. At least you're not getting high and dry. You're just not necessarily getting the bite that you're looking for. It's always going to be entertaining, though.
All right, before we let you go, you're like the most positive guy I know, and I love that about you. Put a positive spin on the St. Louis Blues right now.
The St. Louis Blues. I'll tell you what. I was at skate this morning and got the chance to talk to Braden Shen and Drew Bannister, for that matter. And the common sentiment, and it's just crazy to me, the common sentiment is if they can figure out some line change issues, it will solve a lot of their problems. Line change issues is going to solve a lot of problems. Now, listen, man, you know I am not the authority when it comes to hockey. I just report what I hear. But if you're telling me that you are just little nitpicking fixes away from being competitive, I'll take that and I will run with that to the heavens. Line changes has been a focal point for the Blues. If they can start to tighten that up, it's going to help on the offensive end. It's going to help with the forecheck. It's going to help with all of it. And hopefully we can see a revamped Blues team. And just to sprinkle in something on the top, if you can just hang around and get Robert Thomas back, you get a superstar and a great player at that, great human being at that, I think anything can happen.
I'm glad you brought that up because we played that audio earlier. We heard some of your questions that you presented earlier today. And I chuckled in the moment because they're coming off an 8-1 loss where everybody where there's basically post-game comments that some of the players on the team quit, and the top thing that was talked about was line changes. So that to me, I chuckle at that more than anything else.
I was scratching my head a little bit too, and needed some context. Braden Shen provided a bit more for me, but you know, at the end of the day, they're in a tough situation. I think a true, in all seriousness, saving grace for the Blues is coming into the season. I think we all understood that with how much they offloaded last season, they put themselves in a position to still be relevant to a certain degree, but with a focus on building for the future, something that a lot of Cardinals fans would like to see the Cardinals do. And I think the Blues are sticking with that. And right now, you do have a lot of young talent in and around the system. You've got to be optimistic in general for the future, even if it means a couple bleak moments in the present day.
In addition to your work with Channel 2 and Channel 11, you've got the Wembley's Game soccer podcast. If folks are soccer fans, they should be listening to that. What's the best way to get to it?
Oh, Spotify, Wembley's Game with Daniel Stever. We're coming up on our 50th episode, which I am so excited about. I was so hesitant, and this is what I tell a lot of young journalists. Don't be hesitant to produce your own content if you're passionate about it. I was so hesitant to jump into it, and I thought to myself, well, if I could just get a couple friends that would lend me their time, I think it would make it worth a listener's while to hear that conversation. And to think at this point I've got 44 episodes out, that means 44 friends have been generous enough to give me their time. It's the best thing about the podcast.
Well, we appreciate you giving us some of your time, and we will ask you again in the very near future, I'm sure.
Always available for you, Matt. Great chatting with you.
Awesome. That's Daniel Esteve, Fox 2, Channel 11, the Wembley's Game Soccer Podcast. Follow him on Twitter at Daniel J. Esteve. And every time he drops a new podcast or has a great story, he always puts it right there. So great stuff. By the way, so Tamar Scher, and we'll talk about this with Tom Ackerman in a few moments. Tamar was doing the sidelines for the Billikens broadcast yesterday with Tom. And Daniel was retweeting Tamar's stuff. You know, one's a Channel 2, one's a Channel 4, but that's the kind of guy that Daniel is, always looking for everybody to do awesome things, and that's one of the reasons. I can just tell you, I like telling people about good people, and I can tell you that Daniel Esteve, he is as good of a person as there is out there. So when you watch him at night on Channel 2, you go, you know what? I heard that guy's a pretty good guy. You know, sometimes we see a celebrity, you're like, wonder if that person's a good guy. I bet they're nice. I bet that person's an a-hole. Well, if you're ever doing that with Daniel Esteve, you can know. You know what? I heard that guy's a pretty good guy. Another good guy, Tom Ackerman. He joins us next on KMOX. It's Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. The Sloomans basketball team picking up their first win of the Josh Schertz era yesterday as they knock off Vila, a non-D1, 95-44. In addition to being the KMOX sports director, he is also now the TV voice of St. Louis Billikens basketball on FanDuel Sports Network Midwest. He is our good friend Tom Ackerman, and he joins us right now. Tom, thanks for the time, and congratulations on the new gig. Very, very, very cool.
Matt, I appreciate it. Good to talk to you, and it has been great. We had a really good time yesterday calling the game. Have a great team there with Troy Robertson as my analyst, and the sideline reporter is none other than Tamar Scher of KMOV. And then, you know, to have the backing of a producer like Brian Shapiro, who does Cardinals games, Nick Thompson, the director of the Cardinals games. It's an awesome crew with a lot of familiar faces working behind the scenes.
That little Indiana connection between you and Tamar.
Yeah. Tamar Scher was one of my 5-star recruit. I gave her a tour of the IU Media School back in the day when it was just becoming well established. I'm good friends with her dad, Howie Scher. And kind of swayed that I didn't need a lot of swaying because her dad went to IU, but kind of explained to them what the IU Media School is all about. She went through 4 years there, did an incredible job, and, you know, went to Evansville to do TV for the NBC affiliate. KMOV hired her, and she is ascending quickly. So yes, it was nice to have all the IU folks together. There were some other IU people over there, too. So it's good to have everyone together.
So I don't know what you really take from the game. It's a non-D1. The Billikens do what they're supposed to do, and they score a bunch of points. They play really well. I guess for purpose of this conversation, probably a bigger picture. At the end of the day, they did what they were supposed to do yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, I went into it, Matt, looking at, I just wanted to see the players. You know, I just wanted to see guys play. I wanted to see what they look like moving around. And I got a nice opportunity to do that, knowing going in that they're playing Abilene University, a team from Kansas City that is an NAIA school, that the only reason that they were in the game is because they saw that SLU had gotten Robbie Avila. And I mean, that's it. I mean, that's really the reason, is they thought it would be kind of funny. And so they reached out to SLU, and they ended up getting the connection with a couple of their coaches. Josh Schertz said yes, and it turned out to be the home opener. And Avila is, you know, what it is. I mean, it's an NAIA school. They love playing hoops there outside of Kansas City, but, you know, it's a program still trying to figure it out. And they came out and actually played with a ton of energy, and at one point it's a 19-18 game. But SLU is bigger and deeper and stronger and just better players, and just over time they wore them out. But over that time, I got a chance to see a lot of different players, and that's what I was hoping to see. With Robbie out, and that's unfortunate that he has his injury, and he's going to be out for, I would say, probably a few more weeks. I mean, it's probably going to be another month, I would say, just like the first time he sprained his ankle. So you the silver lining is you see who is going to have to step up while he's out. And I got a chance to see a lot of different guys. So that's what I wanted. I know what Gibson Jimerson can do, and he starts knocking down threes. I know what Isaiah Swope can do. He starts shooting threes. He missed a bunch of them, but, you know, I've seen him play. What I wanted to see was Amari McCautry, their freshman point guard who has good size. I wanted to see A.J. Casey, their transfer from Miami. I wanted to see what Anya is all about, having watched him on TV in the Santa Clara game. Big guy. Certainly have some promise there in the post and things like that. So it was an opportunity for me to get eyeballs on these players.
It's a bummer, obviously, that Robbie Avila is not there here at the beginning of the season. But I guess if you're looking for a silver lining, if you're going to have a 3 to 4 week injury, you would much rather it happen in November than in January, February, and obviously March.
Without question. And, you know, you want to have him prepped for the A-10 schedule. Unfortunately, you know, they have some opportunities here in the non-conference, that some good wins that could help them come tournament time if they need them. One of them was missed there in Santa Clara. And if he continues to play in that game, who knows? I mean, they were right there with Santa Clara. Santa Clara is a good team. They're going to win a lot of games this year. And so a win against them would have helped. A loss doesn't necessarily hurt you because they're, like I said, they're going to win a lot. But they have some games here coming up. I think the Loyola Marymount game this Saturday could have used him. The game against San Francisco, Wichita State. I mean, there's some games that he's going to miss, I'm assuming, with this injury, that you could use him. But like you said, it is, the timing of it doesn't absolutely kill you. And you do get a chance to get some players in that lineup. McCautry is the one who got to be in this lineup because I figure they're going to play Anya. They're going to play Swope. They're going to play Jimerson. They're going to play Thames, and Hughes was coming off the bench. But I got a chance to see what McCautry can do as a point guard. Big guy, can absolutely dish and do a lot of different things. So that was an opportunity for him and for me to be able to see him. And I think the same thing. Josh Schertz has, I think at this point, an opportunity to figure out who his 5, 6, 7, 8th man, you know, who they are going to be. He's going to try to get some players to step up. He's not going to play 10 players in a game during this season. It's going to be 8 at the most. That's how he likes it. At Indiana State, I watched and called a lot of his games. He would play 7 players. You know, he would bring one or two guys off the bench and ride his starters. So who is that rotation, and what kind of chemistry will they have? So without Robbie Avila, you will figure that out, and you know, it's important. It's important right now, this time of year, to get some sort of chemistry developing within this offense.
We're talking with KMOX sports director and TV voice of the Billikens, Tom Ackerman. This first four games of the season, so essentially the first month of the year, they're basically playing one game a week. And a lot of teams play two games a week to start out the season during the non-conference. That means they're getting a lot of practice time with some games in between. As Coach Schertz puts together a group, some of his former players, some Billikens former players, and another group of players that have just come into the program from elsewhere, is it good that they've got all this practice time in the first month of the season?
Yeah, I think it is. They want to be able to spend some time together and really work this out. I mean, he worked him pretty hard before Santa Clara, got him practicing on consecutive days and just getting into a routine together. So yes, it is very important to have a lot of practice time. And I think this week you're able to not only get in the routine of being on campus and getting your classwork done, going to practice, et cetera. But you got a big game coming up. I mean, Loyola Marymount's going to be a lot different than Avila. So they will have a challenge on their hands on Saturday. And so it's a nice way to get yourself your scout, get yourself settled. Who are you going to be playing against? What does this video look like? You're not rushing. And there will be time for that. As the season starts to ramp up a little bit, you get into conference play, might be moving a little bit faster on you. Well, by the time you get to March, you're going to have to be a tournament-ready team. So you're going to have to play every day in a tournament or every other day. Well, every other day in some cases, or every day in others. And so it's going to be a ramp up for them all season long, without question.
Final thing on the Billikens for you. Gibson Jimerson played well. You said it earlier. We know who he is. We know what he can do. But he's also a guy who's been at SLU for a really long time playing in one system, and now he moves into a new system. Can you speak to the challenge that it is for a guy like that who has been doing it kind of one way for a while to continue to be successful but do it in a brand new system in his final year?
I think it's going to be a great benefit to him. I think that he played well under Travis Ford. But he was playing in a certain system, and he was the shooter. Everybody knew that Gibson was the guy that you had to pay attention to and guard. And I think he had some challenges in getting open without the ball. I think there was a lot of, doubling, sometimes grabbing, just in general not allowing him to have much breathing room. I think that in this system, this actually really helps him out. He's smart. He can figure it out. I don't know that it's that big of a hurdle for him, to be honest. I mean, I looked at him running in this offense from the first practice that they allowed us to watch, and he looked like he had it down already. And again, 60-year player. This guy's been playing college basketball since before the pandemic. I mean, I wonder how many teammates he's had and how much experience he has. He had options. He could have gone to other places. He believed in what Schertz was selling him. And the biggest thing of all is Gibson's going to get open. He's going to have open three-point looks. What happened last night was Avila was collapsing in the paint and not allowing SLU to attack with some of their bigger bodies. So guess what they did? They shot 41 threes. And Gibson fired off probably, 18 of those. And knocked down six, I think something like that. If I had to look at it, maybe 6 of 16, something like that, 6 of 15. So he knocks down six threes, get used to that. I mean, he's going to be having the green light if more than ever. So I think it's actually enticing to him, maybe more than he's ever had. And by the way, there are other players who benefit from that as well. I mean, Isaiah Swope's going to shoot and shoot and shoot no matter what team he's on, but he loves the system. Avila can shoot threes. And then you turn to Larry Hughes. Hughes knocks down five threes yesterday against Avila. And, these players, I think, are really going to have a lot of fun with it. The only problem that SLU will run into, and we saw it in the Santa Clara game, is if they face a team that is taller and perhaps more athletic than they are. They are athletic, but that Santa Clara team can get up and down the floor, and they had some height. And I think that SLU struggled with that a little bit. So maybe in the A-10, they're really going to have to run that offense to perfection to keep up with some of these bigger, stronger teams. But they'll be able to hold their own, and I think that Jimerson will be the X factor. He goes off for 28 or 30 against somebody like he did yesterday, And I know it's Avila, but it doesn't matter. I mean, he gets open looks and knocks him down. They're going to be tough to handle. They are going to be tough to handle. I think SLU's got some big days ahead.
We'll continue to plug what's going to be coming up later on today and every day at noon. Tom, you, me, Kevin Wheeler, Bernie Miklas get together each day for the Gas House Gang. Monday, it's all four of us. Tuesday through Friday, it's a combination of two of us. And it's been a lot of fun getting this thing started. We focus on the Cardinals, get into a few other things as well. Today on a Cardinals Monday, we did 45 minutes, nothing but Cardinals. And it always feels like it gets done, and we could have just kept going forever and ever.
I agree. You know, there's so much that you can talk about that today our angle was kind of if they make all of these trades, if they start to lose some of these established pieces, who steps up? And I love that conversation today. So, you know, we talked about, okay, if Helsley and Kittredge are gone, who closes? Who sets up? What are the options? If Arenado is gone, who plays third? Who plays second? You know, what does the Cardinals look in 25, and is there a chance that they could be better than last year? And if that is the case, who has to step up? Well, the young players, okay? Who are the young players? Who needs to be better? Who needs to blossom? And what are they forgetting? And, you know, all these things, you know, or who are we forgetting, I should say? And, you know, the name was brought up, Victor Scott. These kinds of conversations are a lot of fun, and I think that for Cardinals fans, it's a great thing to have it every day at noon that you can rely on baseball talk, especially Monday. Now, on other days, like tomorrow, Kevin Wheeler and I, you know we're going to talk college football. We're going to have some other topics as well, but there will always be baseball. So there's many sports options around. We all know that with the click of a mouse, or you can watch something on your phone. But nobody's doing Cardinal baseball every day like we are. And I think that is very, very enticing for our unbelievable fans who have leaned on KMOX for years to do that very thing. So why not deliver?
100%. Tom Ackerman is the KMOX sports director. You hear him on Total Information AM every weekday morning, and he's now the TV voice of St. Louis University Billikens basketball on FanDuel Sports Network Midwest. Tom, as always, appreciate the time, and we'll talk to you later on this week during the Gas House game.
Buddy, I appreciate it very much. Have a great rest of the show, and thanks for having me.
Tom Ackerman joining us here on the program. We appreciate him taking a few moments with us, talking mostly SLU Billikens basketball. He is the TV voice now of the Billikens. We will take a break and have more in just a moment as we'll wrap things up after this. It's Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.